You guys were going to have such a good sermon today. It was going to happen. I was going to talk for just a couple of minutes, and then Tony Brown was going to share for the rest of the service. But he got called into work this morning, so we're pushing that service back for a couple of weeks. But it was going to be so good. So we've been doing this series of following Jesus on his way to Jerusalem, and we're jumping ahead to where Jesus is already in Jerusalem, and then we're going to have to backtrack because of Tony and his work schedule. But Jesus is already in Jerusalem, and we've been following him there. He knows that he's going to be tortured and killed in that place, and so we're picking up the pieces of what we can learn from him along the way. So, in our scripture reading today, it would seem like Peter is the main character in this. He's talked about a lot, but he's not the star of the show. And that's true of a lot of stories. Hopefully it's true of your story and mine. But a little background on Peter. He was a fisherman. And Jesus came walking down the shore one day and saw him out on his boat. And he said, "Peter, follow me." And that changed Peter's life. Said, "You've been fishing for fish, and I'm going to make you a fisher of men." It's huge, huge. Jesus was a rabbi, and not only just a rabbi, not only just a teacher, but he was also seen by many people as being the Messiah, the one sent by God to save and rescue the world. And when Jesus says, "Follow me," he is telling Peter, not only do I want you to be with me and to hang out with me and those sorts of things, but I believe that you can become like me. Incredible thing for Peter, this seemingly knuckle dragon guy, to hear, like, "Peter, you can be like me. Come and follow me. Hang out with me." And he became part of Jesus's inner circle. And from that point on, Peter had this belonging and purpose and identity that was just immersed and centered on Jesus. And he was passionately loyal to Jesus. So he was so excited to be on Team Jesus, and he kind of had this outlook on the world of it's us and Team Jesus, me and Jesus, and our team versus the rest of the world. There's the people on the inside and people on the outside, good guys and bad guys, and we're the good guys, and those are the bad guys, and with Team Jesus, we're gonna save the world. Peter had some maturing left to do. But the truest thing about Peter is that Jesus loved Peter, and Peter loved Jesus. So Jesus was walking to Jerusalem. He went into Jerusalem. Peter was with him there the whole way. And this is a great chapter 22 if you want to read it, Luke 22. They're preparing for the Passover. We're kind of preparing for that here. Jesus' last meal. Before he died, his last meal with his disciples, we celebrate that the Thursday before Easter. Probably more information in your bulletin. And then as Jesus is having this last meal with his disciples, this argument breaks out. Not the first time that they've had this argument, his disciples, and it's about who is the greatest. You see, for Peter and some of the other disciples, you can go to that, Sam. See, for Peter and some of the disciples, it wasn't only of like who's in and who's out, but of the in, who's on top. So there's this massive hierarchy of like, hey, we're better than you because you're out and we're in. And then of the people that are in, who's the best? Who's the most important? Who's the greatest? And Peter and Jesus probably breathed a sigh of desperation and frustration. He is in his last days, and he tells them, "You've got it all wrong. You've got it all wrong." That's the way that the rest of the world, that every other tribe organizes things, and they're among them, of the in and the out and who's on top and who's on charge. But if you're going to be a part of me and what I'm doing and my tribe and my people, we are defined and distinct and known for loving those who are on the outside. We care about those that are on the outside, and whoever is on top is on actually on the bottom. We don't lord it over other people. We are servants. Jesus says, I'm the servant. As I serve you, you will serve each other and serve other people. You've got it all wrong. And then he says, I'm going to read this, where to go. Simon, Simon, Satan has asked to sift all of you as wheat. But I have prayed for you, Simon, Simon Peter. So when he's saying Simon, he also means Peter. But I have prayed for you, Simon, that your faith may not fail. And when you have turned back, strengthen your brothers. Simon, Simon, after you've turned back, after you have fallen down and gotten back up, come back and strengthen and encourage your brothers. Strengthen and encourage other people. And then later on that night, you know, Peter had said, Lord, I'm ready to go to prison and to death for you. That's never going to happen. I will not betray you. And Peter, and Jesus says, Peter, before the rooster crows tonight, you're going to deny me three times. Peter didn't believe it. He didn't believe it. But later on that night, some chief priests and some goons, they find Jesus and his followers out in the garden outside the city of Jerusalem, and they arrest him and they take him to the chief priest's house. Big house. All the other disciples have fled, but Peter, he's following, he's watching. Doesn't say anything. Doesn't say, hey, stop, guys. They take Jesus into this trial, and they hold this mock trial, this dummy trial, where they're accusing Jesus of all sorts of things. And Peter's standing out in the courtyard watching, looking in, not saying a word, not standing beside him. And people began asking, hey, aren't you with him? No, I'm not with him. Hey, aren't you with this guy that's being accused of these things and surrounded by goons? And no, I don't even know him. Third time. Hey, you're from Galilee. You've got to know him. Because all his followers, most of his followers are from Galilee. And by your accent and the way you act and stuff, you're not from around here. You got to be with him. No, I don't even know that Jesus guy. Is that even his name? Then the rooster crows. And Jesus looks out the door or out the window, sees Peter. And the words that Jesus had spoken said, before the rooster crows, you will have denied me three times. Just rack Peter's soul, and he runs out into the darkness, weeping. And I'm sure to many of the people that knew this story and read this story, and to Peter, while he was out in the dark of the night, weeping, that so many of the parables of Jesus came back to him, where there was people on the inside and people on the outside, and people on the outside of the party or the banquet were out in the darkness weeping and gnashing of teeth. Peter woke up to find himself in a place and being and doing things that he thought that he could never be, could never do, didn't believe was possible for him. He had betrayed his best friend. He had watched as his best friend and his Lord and the one that changed his life got taken away, and he didn't say a word. Not a word, except for I don't know him. And he found himself out in the darkness, a place that he thought that he would never be, weeping. woke up to find himself a betrayer of the one that he loved. And within 24 hours, Jesus was publicly tortured and executed. And Peter never said a word. This was the darkest moment of Peter's life. Darkest moment of Peter's life. Moment that he thought would never, ever come. But maybe you've been there before. Maybe you're there now. A place where you've woken up to find things that are true about you and true about what you are capable of that you wish weren't true and you thought maybe weren't true. Things that you found things inside of you that you would have liked to believe weren't actually there. I know I've been in Peter's place in this night of betrayal too many times. There's a guy named Alan. Just one of the stories. Growing up, we moved around a lot. I can't even remember the number of places that we lived. I don't remember the number of schools that I went to. I didn't have a lot of friends growing up. Partly because when you move from a lot that everybody's kind of got their group and they've got their thing and they know each other and they have a history and things. And so there's these little circles of people, you know, and when you're new, it's hard to break into those. And I never stayed in one place to break into those things, even if I had the time to do it. And on top of that, I was all kind of messed up inside. So I didn't have a lot of friends growing up. But I had one friend one time. Named Alan. Alan was a little guy and he was funny. And I was new and I was awkward. So we kind of gravitated towards each other and it was just me and Alan. We sat next to each other on the bus. We sat next to each other in all the classes that we could in seventh grade. We sat next to each other at lunch, you know, and if we were if we were picked on, then at least we were picked on together, you know? One of the things that I loved and I thought was really cool about Alan is that his mom made his own clothes, his clothes for him, made all of his clothes. And he hated it. And he didn't hate it because the clothes were weird. He hated it because they didn't have brand names on them. And I don't know what it's like to be in middle school now, but I know back then that having name brand stuff was really important. And, you kind of set up your hierarchy. And like one of the things that gets you on the bottom of the hierarchy as far as the kids go is if you don't have name brand stuff and cool things. So Alan had cool stuff, I thought. But he didn't think so, and other kids didn't think so. His mom made his own clothes. So he wanted name brands on his clothes. And one day, Alan had been enough of an aggravation to his mom and hurt her feelings about the things that she had been doing for him enough that she decided to do something about it. And I remember Alan getting on the school bus that morning with his head hung low, you know, and hanging our heads low was not... it was unusual for first thing in the morning, you know, middle of the day, end of the day, that's normal stuff. But like starting the day out that way, you know, that was unusual. So I was wondering what was up with Alan this morning. And he threw himself down beside me and he let me know what it was. He showed me. His mom had put logos on all of his clothes. And he thought it was so stupid, and he was afraid that everybody else would think it was stupid too, and he would get picked on even more. But it was really, really cool. I don't know if you remember the Izod alligator. She sewed the alligator on some of his shirts, some of his clothes, but there was a man with like flapping legs outside of the alligator's out of the alligator's mouth. It was awesome. And then he had the polo guy, and instead of the polo jockey guy like riding up and proud, he was falling off the horse, you know. It was really, really great. So she put her own spin on it. She wasn't going to put polo and Izod's stuff on there. This was hers, and she was going to put her logo on stuff, and she did, and they were awesome. And he showed me, and he was feeling so down, and I just flipped out about it in a good way. I was like, Alan, this is so cool. Oh my gosh, this is amazing. Partly because I thought that it was, and partly because I wanted him to feel how amazing that was and feel good about it. And some other kids around the bus, they heard me getting excited and talking to him and things, and then they started paying attention to what it was, and they thought too, because it was. And they're like, oh, hey, Alan, look at this, so great, hey, Alan, come here, you know. By about halfway through the day, even the cool kids were thinking that Alan's clothes were cool and that Alan, therefore, was cool. And they invited him into their circles. But not me. Alan wanted pretended like I didn't exist because, you know, Alan was finally getting what he wanted, acceptance, something we all want, you know, and acceptance by the cool kids. So he was welcomed into circles now that I wasn't welcomed into. And he pretended like I didn't exist. Went on for days. Then all of a sudden, we were in gym class. We were out in the field. We were playing flag football, two teams, lined up facing each other. And I look up, and Alan's right there in front of me. And my eyes and my soul just darken over with a dark storm of nastiness, hate and anger, frustration from 100 different places, most of which had nothing to do with Alan. And when Hike was called, I was on top of him so fast. I remember the sound that he made when I hit him and all the air left his chest and left his body. Hit him in the chest and stomach. And I remember when I had my hands on his back and I drove my knee as hard as I could up into his small chest, and how his little ribs flexed a little bit. And I remember looking at him on the ground, struggling to move, struggling to breathe. And the storm fading away from my eyes and from my soul, and looking and seeing my friend, one of the only friends I've had in my life, lying on the ground, gasping for breath, in pain and struggling to move. I told the coach that it was an accident. And that was incredibly true and an incredible lie all at the same time. And I remember how the coach looked at me when he said, "Weren't you guys friends?" It's not the last time I heard that day. Got home from school. Didn't tell anybody about it, and nobody too. And I went over to Alan's house to tell him I was sorry. His mom answered the door, and I remember the way she looked at me, and she said, "Alan doesn't want to see you. Hey, weren't you guys friends? Weren't you guys friends?" And all I said was, "Yeah, we were." And I walked away. Yeah, we were. Not out of anger, but out of sadness and grief. And I never really talked to Alan again. He started getting rides to school. Kept his distance. And I moved on to another school, another town. I've been in Peter's place so many times. So many times. But Peter's story didn't end with weeping in the darkness. And neither did mine. See, when the rooster crowed that night, Peter remembered the words of Jesus, but he didn't remember all of them. He remembered when Jesus said, "Peter, before the rooster crows today, you will deny me three times." I'm sure that memory hit him like a curse, just echoing through his soul. But he didn't remember everything. He forgot that Jesus also said, "Simon, Simon, Peter, Peter, Satan has asked to sift you like wheat. But I have prayed for you, Simon, that your faith may not fail, and when you have turned back, strengthen your brothers. I am praying for you, Simon, that after you have fallen down, that you will get back up again, and that you will take what you have learned in the darkness and use that to strengthen and encourage others." Weeping out in the darkness outside of Jerusalem, Peter had forgotten these words, just like you do, just like I do. But Jesus wasn't finished with Peter yet. We see in the Gospel according to John, chapter 21, Jesus has died, he's tortured and died, just like Peter left him to do without a word. But he also rose again. And Jesus started visiting people, showing up to people in their lives, lots and lots of people, Peter, one of them. But Peter had quit being a disciple. He had quit being a follower of Jesus. After all, he blew it. He blew it. He was out. He went back to being a fisherman. All that identity and that purpose and that belonging, he left that behind that night when he denied Jesus. That was over for him. Who he thought he was turned out to not be true. He wasn't a follower of Jesus, and so he was done. He went back to fishing. But Jesus wasn't done with him. Jesus came to remind him of what he had said before that all happened. Peter was out fishing in the boat, and Jesus showed up on the shore. Peter recognized who it was. And because Peter loved Jesus and Jesus loved Peter, Peter didn't wait for the boat to come to shore. He just threw himself into the water and swam after Jesus. And as they sat on the shore, fish frying over the fire, Jesus began to help him, pull him out of that pit, pull him out of that darkness. He asked Peter, he said, "Peter, do you love me? Do you love me?" With all that stuff in between them that they hadn't talked about, of what Peter said, I would never leave you, even if it means prison and death. I'll never leave you. And then to betray him. And that Jesus knew that he would. They'd never talked about it. So it was there in between them. And Jesus didn't ask about that night. He just said, Peter, do you love me? You've gotten down to this place where you found out that when the heat's turned up sometimes, that you're not all that who you thought that you were. You found out that you got some growing and maturing to do. But dig a little deeper, Peter. Is there anything deeper in you than that? Do you love me? Do you love me? He asked him that 3 times. He said, if you love me, Peter, feed my sheep. Take care of my sheep. Jesus used that imagery all the time. I'm the shepherd. Follow me. Do what I do. Be who I am. Do you love me? It had to cut deep into Peter. Yes, Lord, you know that I love you. You know that I love you. And Jesus finished that conversation with some of the very same words that he spoke to him the first time they met. Follow me. Follow me. Peter, you can be like me. I believe in you. You love me and I love you. When you fall down, get back up and encourage others by what you've learned in the darkness. The truest thing about you, Peter, and about you and about me is not our failings, but hopefully that you love God and that God loves you. And out of his brokenness, Peter had richer gifts to give those around him. It was no longer, hey, I'm awesome because I'm with Jesus and in the inner circle and you can be like me. Peter wasn't perfect after this, not even close. But his message was no longer, I'm awesome and I'm on the inside and you're on the outside. He was one that could say to broken people living in a broken world, I know. I've been there too. I'm not all that awesome, but let me tell you about the one who is. I know. Because of what Peter found in the darkness, God was able, began reforming and reshaping and maturing Peter's life until he had the humility and the kindness of God more perfectly impressed upon his life and his being. This wasn't the end of my story either. I was a Christian driving the air from Alan's lungs and busting up his ribs. Yeah, a Christian. But God didn't give up on me. That's the big point of the story. I'm not the star of the story. Peter's not the star of his story. God is the star of these stories. God didn't give up on me. It's as if in so many situations that the words that Jesus spoke to Peter, that God meant those for me. Nathan, Nathan. Satan has asked to sift you like wheat, to sort you out. But I've prayed for you, Nathan, that when you fall down, your faith may not fail you. And when you've gotten back up again, use what you have learned to strengthen and encourage others. This and probably dozens or hundreds of other experiences have maybe made me a different kind of pastor than other people. Perhaps. I get together with other pastors, they complain about their deacons or their board of directors and things, or whatever. They say, these people are trying to kill me, I think. If I ever say that, I really mean it. Roger, always changed the name to protect the innocent, but Roger was a guy that was a part of our church for a long time. Roger lived a rough life, partly because of the decisions that he made and partly because of the stuff that had been done to him. Roger came by to see me one day, and we were just standing out here in the entryway, beautiful day like this, and he'd had a rough day, you know, and we were just talking, you know, kind of surface level stuff, and then I just looked at him and I asked, like, hey, is everything okay? And I saw the storm come over his eyes. And as fast as a blink, Roger pulled a 10-inch kitchen knife out of his back pocket and swung it at my neck. A lot of people would say, hey, you know what? I'm done being a minister to Roger. That is a clear sign that he needs somebody. It's not me. But I could see the storm in Roger's eyes, and I knew that same storm had raged inside of my soul also. And I knew that wasn't all of who he was. Because when similar storms had taken over my life and had blinded me, God helped me see that that wasn't all of who I was either. And like I knew it would, the storms eventually burned themselves out. Roger's eyes cleared up, and he came to his senses, and he dropped the knife, and we were fine. In this ministry that God has called me to, I have weathered storms with people like that many times, and continue to walk beside them because I have been in that place before, and God hasn't given up on me. I've run out into that outer darkness and wept enough that when I see it coming up on somebody else, that I know. And Jesus says, Nathan, Nathan, when you have fallen down, get back up and use what you have learned to strengthen and encourage others. See, this story is not just about Peter's betrayal. We all live Peter's betrayal. We all will. There will be moments in your life that will send you out weeping into the darkness. When you find out things about yourself that you wish weren't there, things that you thought were gone, that you'd already dealt with, that you put in the past, found out that things that are true about you that you wish weren't true. We all fall down, big ways and small ways. And I know that I'm not done falling down because my name is Nathan. And I'm still living and I am still breathing. And the good news is that God already knows that about you and God already knows that about me. And it's not a deal breaker. It's not a deal breaker. From that dark place, remember the words of Jesus to Peter, all of the words to Peter, and dig deeper till you find that simple place where you love God and God loves you, where you remember that the truest thing about you is not that you are flawed because of the things that you've done, and you're flawed because of who you are, and you're flawed because of things that have been done to you. But the truest thing about who you are is that you love God, and God loves you. And you get back up and you use your failings and your falling down to strengthen and encourage others.